Big show for you here today. Trevor Sikkema, Pro Football Focus, and the NFL Stock Exchange show with Connor Rogers joins me to break down his five favorite player to team fits from his most recent mock draft. We've got some receiver talk in here. It's a little Carnell Tate coming to T. Higgins to another team's Jamar Chase. Pretty exciting matchup there. We got Omar Cooper, some age-based debates, and the prospect that Trevor would stand on the table for in this year's class. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. We've got another edition of Mock Draft Monday for you guys, and joining us, I think for the third time in a row, third annual trip here on Mock Draft Monday, it is Trevor Sikkema, Pro Football Focus, the NFL Stock Exchange podcast. Trevor, what's going on, buddy?
The three-peat, baby. We're here. We're here. Back-to-back wasn't enough. We had to get that third title in the mix. So, Matt, I appreciate you having me, man. I always get to enjoy talking some football with you. So I appreciate it, brother.
No doubt. And I think you've nailed some picks here, at least some good pairings over the last couple of years. I was looking through our DMs on this. I believe you had Bo Nix to the Broncos a few years ago. I think that was one that you had there. Last year you had Will Johnson to the Cardinals. He went in the second round. You had him in the first round. Seattle Seahawks, Nicky Manwari. You had that last year as well. Again, not first round, second round, but still. Look at that, baby. You're on fire. So you set the sights pretty high here, brother. So we got to crush it once again.
Yeah, no. You do this long enough, you'll luck into some hits. But no, honestly, like all of those spots for all of those guys, it's sort of easy to see why the teams gravitated towards them, whether it was scheme fits or exactly what their big team needs were. But yeah, man, I mean, like I remember a couple of years ago as well, I was on with the Arizona Cardinals, like their flagship podcast, their in-house podcast. And I told them, I was like, hey, Michael Wilson, he's one of my favorite receivers in the entire draft. I think he'd be perfect for Arizona with right where they're at. They not only draft him, but then Michael Wilson like turns out to be an absolute baller. And so they came up to me at the combine this year and we're like, we have to have you back on. So it's always fun when you get one of those right. And it obviously pans out in a big way.
No doubt. Well, obviously that's why we have Trevor on every single year, because he's a sharp guy. He gets these play. He gets the entire exercise here that we're doing with Mock Draft Monday, which is we're trying to get the best draft analysts, the best mock drafters out there to, you know, not just do the whole exercise of mock drafts, like, oh, they're putting the whole thing together. No. It's about the real ball stuff, the player to team fits that they absolutely love from their most recent mock draft. Because when you're making a pick for all 32 teams, if you're doing a first round mock, and I don't know, Trevor, do you how many rounds do you go with like your final mock draft?
So the final one that I do will be one round, but like before that, funny enough, like on the Stock Exchange show, like a week before the draft, Connor and I do a 7-round mock draft. We do all 256 picks, and we will go through all of it for everything. It's fun, man. It's a big charity stream that we do. It's like a 7-8 hour stream, but we do try, like the official one that I submit for like mock draft accuracy scores is just one round. But we got one for the sickos, you know, right before the draft to make sure that we go 7 rounds on it.
Well, regardless, whether you're doing all 250 whatever picks or the 32 picks of the first round, you don't love every single one of them, but there's a good handful that you're like, yes, this one absolutely fits. And that's what this show is all about here. We're going to get Trevor's five favorite player to team fits from his most recent mock draft that he absolutely loves. We're going to dive into those. We're going to break down those prospects, and then we'll get one prospect from the 2026 NFL draft that Trevor is willing to stand on the table for. So with that, welcome to another edition of Mock Draft Monday. All right, Trevor, let's hear it. Who is your first player to team fit that you absolutely love?
So it's funny, we brought up this team already, but I'm going to stay with the Arizona Cardinals. I've been pretty good with picking guys to this team, whether it was Michael Wilson or Will Johnson. And this time I'm going to go with Sonny Styles, the linebacker from Ohio State. Now, I wonder if maybe we get a different Ohio State player here. If Arville Reese doesn't go number 2 overall to the New York Jets, I think there's a chance that he could go number 3 overall to the Arizona Cardinals. You know, there's some whispers like, hey, is Josh Sweat going to be on the team for the long term? If he's not, then all of a sudden maybe more of an edge rusher type of an addition might be better suited for them. That's where Arville Reese could come into play. But as the team stands right now, Sonny Styles, the absolute combine hero, somebody who had an unbelievable year this past season, elite run defense grades and coverage grades from our PFF grading system this past year. He also has what I believe is the best single game of any prospect in any position that I have watched, and that's his game in the Big Ten championship game against Indiana. It's as if they had the communication radio frequencies mixed up and the offensive coordinator for Indiana was actually in his ears instead of, you know, in Fernando Mendoza's ears, because every single time they were running the ball left or right, he was seeing the keys. He was seeing, okay, this is where the ball is going to go. This is where the player is going to go. And he was matching that intelligence with physicality the way that he did all year long. When I look at the Arizona Cardinals, yeah, of course, I think that they would like to draft a quarterback, but after Fernando Mendoza going number one overall, I don't think that anybody's going to be in consideration for the top 10. So instead, I think that the Cardinals and Monty Austin-Ford are going to look at this to say, hey, let's just build the best team that we possibly can, and it's most likely that we're taking a big swing on a quarterback next year. To me, that's with Sonny Styles, because if you put him in the middle of your defense the way Ohio State did this past season, I think everything changes for the better. So that's really the last area of this team that over the last two or three years, as they've built out the defense, that's the last area where they've really hit with a premium position and a premium player. But that's where I'm at with him. I think the pairing of the Cardinals makes a ton of sense. I wonder if Monty Austin-Ford, their general manager, wants to trade down from this pick. But again, Matt, like, I don't know how many dance partners you're going to get with the trade down. So if they have to stay, if they can trade down, I think there's a good chance that they go offensive line if it's outside of the top five. You know, Francis Maui-Noa, Spencer Fano, somebody like that. But if they've got to stay at three, if they can't get out, I think Sonny Styles is probably the running favorite for them at number three.
Yeah, it's a really good point about potentially wanting to trade down, but who are people trading up for? You know, you could maybe argue that some of the smoke between Tennessee, like I saw Adam Schefter this week said he doesn't think Tennessee is going to take Jeremiah Love, but then you've had other folks like I think Daniel Jeremiah, Dane Brugler say like they think that might end up being the pick. Maybe there's like a little bit of a they're trying to get somebody to trade up ahead of Tennessee for Jeremiah Love, but who's trading up into the top five for a running back? Probably not, in my opinion. That would be the only weird scenario I could kind of see happening. But sticking on this idea of Sonny Styles with the Arizona Cardinals, I was actually out with a couple friends last night who are Cowboys fans watching some of the March Madness games. Yes, that's right. I actually did consume another sport other than football. Breaking news here on the show.
It's a stunner
but one of them asked me, like, what do you think the chances are that Sonny Styles falls to our pick at 12? I said, buddy, he's got a better chance of going 2 than 12. Okay, like, that's not happening. So why don't you just go ahead? Yeah, stone 0.0. Why don't you just go ahead and forget that dream? That ain't happening. Not in this class, and not with how good of a player Sonny Styles is. Linebacker is probably, outside of receiver, my favorite position to study and to think about, because Trevor, I think when you can get a guy that is at that level, you can really change the entire course of your defense if you have one of those guys in the middle there. The problem is it's really hard to do, to find one of these players. It's also really hard to get those guys up to speed early in the NFL, because you're just, with the way modern offenses want to attack over the middle of the field, there's a lot of weight on these guys' shoulders in terms of the mental part of the game. So we know Sonny Styles is a freak. We know he's an incredible specimen, you know, 6'5", just massive figure there in the middle of the defense. But from a mental standpoint, where do you see him being early on in his career as maybe one of these kind of force multipliers in the middle of a defense?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's exactly that. I mean, there are times when I watched him, especially down the stretch this season, where I felt like the football IQ was off the charts for him. And again, Caleb Downs is great independently, right? Like, Arville Reese is great independently. But I don't think that Matt Patricia, the defense coordinator there, has the ability to play those guys as flexible as and as free as they were able to play if you don't have Sonny Styles sitting in the middle of that defense. Like, they knew, whether they were numbers up or numbers down, that, like, Zero was going to have them. Like, he was going to give them their absolute best. He actually did an interview with one of my good friends in the business, Benjamin Solak, and he sat down and they were breaking down some tape recently. And there was a play where Ben was kind of talking about, you know, what Styles saw and how quickly he was able to react to a certain run play, going to a certain side. And it was a situation where the offense actually had the appropriate number of guys on the line of scrimmage. They had the appropriate amount of blockers. They had a hat on a hat, if you will. And that's what you want to do in between the trenches, because that means that you're probably going to spring a run somewhere. And Sonny Styles hit his blocker with so much force and conviction that he knocks his blocker back into the running back, and the running back is stoned like by his own player. And Styles says to himself, he's like, yeah, we're in a situation here where I basically just need to make the tackle with this blocker's back. And like, that's again, like, that's what you talk about when you talk about force multipliers, guys who change the math. That's what Sonny Styles does specifically as a run defender. Now, in true drop coverage, they didn't ask him to do it a ton. Like, he wasn't like going up to the line of scrimmage for mugged looks and then turning the hips and really retreating super far back. He's not like a guy that had like a ton of Tampa 2 drops where he's just going straight down the middle. So he wasn't asked to do that a lot. But we saw from the combine, like, the dude's a crazy athlete. If you want more evidence, his brother's also a crazy athlete. So, like, you know, they got it in the family genes. Like, it's in the DNA to be able to move the way that you want to play in coverage. And so I think that all of that stuff is coming for him. And you talk about him play, not only having the great physical ability when it comes to athleticism, but also the processing. I mean, the build too is what's so alluring for him, because if you look at him as a linebacker, he's like a supersized linebacker prospect. If you measured him as an edge rusher, okay, he's 80th percentile and he's got a 63rd percentile wingspan to him. That's as an edge rusher. Now, the weight's obviously a little lower because he's playing off-ball linebacker, but that's what we're talking about with this dude. And I have a hard time, you know, much to the chagrin of your Cowboys friends. And hey, trust me, I'm a Buccaneers fan, so I'd love a linebacker like this to drop to them in the middle of the first round. It ain't happening. He's not getting out of the top eight, I feel, for how good he is.
Yeah, just, and in this draft too, where there's just not a ton of, I think we're going to have to do away with premium positions in this draft class, like when we're breaking it down, because there's just not a ton of that there. It's like, just take a guy that you think can be a good starter for you for a long time. And I think that I see a tough, it's difficult for me to see this guy getting out of top seven in this draft, because there's just not a ton of those like premium position players that are worthy of, no doubt about it, set it and forget it, top 10 picks in this draft. So yeah, he's going to be a guy that's going to go high. He could certainly go number three here in this spot. And yeah, it might take some time, Trevor, for him to become that guy that just runs down the pipe at like a Fred Warner type and just erases the middle of the field. He might not be that guy in year one. Maybe it won't be till the end of year two or year three, but he has all of the like pterodactyl physical measurements to be that type of player. And when I'm watching receivers in the NFL, when you have one of those guys, like obviously if he was even 80% of Luke Kuechly, that'd be an amazing pick at third overall. Exactly. But it's like how Luke Kuechly used to do that for the Panthers. Just erase that middle of the field there. Super valuable, especially in this division for Arizona, where you're playing against Shanahan, you're playing against McVay, and even obviously the Seahawks are in that Kubiak world now. Even though Kubiak's gone, they're still going to try to live in that offensive world where you're going over the middle. Having a guy like that would be huge, because I think when we're talking about the Cardinals, like Nick Rolla, still the defensive coordinator there, they retained him. They have some good ideas, and they even have some decent personnel, I think, on the depth chart. They were just so injured last year, you couldn't really see it. So getting a potential force multiplier player like this could be really huge for them in this division specifically.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. I mean, you're in one of the toughest, maybe the toughest division in football. There's a couple of them that are up there, but yeah, you got to get a player like this who could be a field general for you in the middle. So I really do believe that he changes things for them. And yeah, you talked about how far this guy could fall. Honestly, not very far. I mean, I'd consider him at two. I'd consider him at three. Certainly the Titans could consider him at four. The Giants certainly could consider him at number five. And then if you get all the way to, you know, seven with the Washington Commanders, I mean, maybe even they think about it even after adding Leo Chanel, just because of how good this guy is. So I just have a really, really tough time thinking that he's going to get out of the top seven, top eight with how good he is.
I want to get myself excited about the Cardinals. I want good things for them. There's some interesting players on that roster. Just let's just give me one other variable at quarterback besides Jacoby Brissett and Gardner Minshew. You know, let's make that Tanner McKee trade. Just get me anything going on than that. Come on. One other variable at quarterback, and I could be really interested in this ball club. You mentioned the New York Giants. You've got a player going to them at the fifth overall pick for your next player to team fit. And I'll pull down the curtain here for the listeners. I'm excited to break this one down because I was just thinking about this player going to this team literally yesterday as I was finishing his charting profile. So, Trevor, I cede the floor to you. Let it rip. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, so we're sticking with Ohio State. Carnell Tate, their wide receiver, going number 5 overall to the New York Giants. I like this fit a lot specifically because of who Jackson Dart is as a quarterback. He wants to push the ball deep down the field. I watched him at Ole Miss for a couple of seasons, especially when he was playing at his best. It was a vertical passing attack, and I feel like that's still what he wants to do. Yeah, he's got that dual threat sort of rushing ability to him, you know, allow the defense to kind of creep up, make sure that they've got, you know, a safety coming down to account for maybe an RPO look or a QB power look or something like that. And then boom, the second that you get them to creep up a little too much, you hit them over the top. We know that Malik Nabers can do it. Obviously, he's coming off of the injury, so you got to factor that into it as well. But Carnell Tate, probably the best vertical receiver in this class with the way that he wins deep, the 0.0 drop rate with him, despite having so many 50-50 chances, contested chances, 30, 40 yards down the field. Yeah, okay, like the 40-yard dash wasn't as great as it could have been, but I'm not real worried about that. I mean, he wins vertically down the field in a lot more ways than just being the fastest guy out there. And I honestly think that we focus a little too much on top speed when we talk about some of these vertical receivers. It's so much of an art when it comes to contested catchability, hand-eye coordination, deep ball tracking, being able to have those little subtleties where you're attacking the blind spot of a corner to get them to, you know, flip their hips the wrong direction, and then all of a sudden you're kind of turning the other way and there's the football. Like, there's a lot of ways to win deep and vertical without just being the fastest guy on the field. I think that we've seen that time and time again with some of the fastest guys in the draft who don't pan out to be that. So I just have a lot of faith in who Carnell Tate is as a vertical receiver, what they're going to want to do with Jackson Dart as their quarterback, how he naturally wants to win and wants to push the ball deep down the field. So to me, when we talk about the Giants potentially adding that, you know, complimentary piece to Malik Nabers, I think that Carnell Tate is actually the best version of that.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. From the deep ball perspective, I read off the stats, I think a few shows ago, where the guys who were most productive downfield last year on 20 plus air yard throws, their average 40 time was 4.49. So pretty much a 4.5, which is just about what Carnell Tate ran. Like, deep speed, people still think that that's the straight line speed, that's what matters most to being a deep threat. This guy completely disproves that when you watch him play. I mean, he is such an elite vertical receiver because he just eats up ground with long strides, good route running. You mentioned the play at the it's not even just the fact that he had zero drops last year. It was also that just from a contested catch standpoint, he was truly, truly special. I mean, he's a very aesthetically pleasing player to watch catch the football because, we're showing the picture on the screen here. He's just always fully extended. He attacks the ball away from his frame. He's just a true, forget technician as a route runner, which he is, but he's a technician at the catch point. But my thought with him, because do you see him truly as a receiver in most classes where you would take him fifth overall?
I don't know. I think that he is... When I think about Carnell Tate, I think of a high-end wide receiver too. I think that that's sort of how, and I view Malik Nabers as a for sure wide receiver one. So to me, that's again why it's sort of the perfect scenario where for example, last year, I'd have Tet wide receiver one in this class. You know, I would have Tetsuro McMillan above all three of the wide receivers and Jordan Tyson and Mekhi Lemon and Carnell Tate. So I have Tetsuro McMillan there. I'd have to go back and look at what my grade was, but I even wonder if I would have Travis Hunter just because of how insanely talented Travis Hunter was. I might have Travis Hunter too. And then we start to talk about Tyson, Lemon, Tate sort of in that next category, maybe with Igbuka where Igbuka was. So that's kind of the way that I view him versus what was last year's class, which I think is what a lot of people like to hear.
I think that's right. I might have, it's tough between Tate and McMillan for me. But still, like, neither one, I probably wouldn't have taken McMillan fifth overall last year. But I mean, in the draft where he went, he goes eighth overall. That was totally a fine pick. And I think for Carnell Tate, fifth overall in this draft, I think is totally fine for just some of the ways that we're talking about. And yeah, he might top out as a great number two receiver, but my thought process of this for the Giants that I was thinking about last night as I was finishing charting up his reception perception was he could just essentially be the T. Higgins to Malik Nabers, Jamar Chase. Like, and you just are never going to forget it. Like, you're just going to set that. You're going to forget it for, you know, 8 years or so. Cause I think Malik is capable of being that Jamar Chase type of player. That's who he kind of in a ceiling outcome would end up being. And I think that not only do you then get a great player here in Carnell Tate as your number two receiver for the Giants, where you just set him on the perimeter and you let him do kind of the straight line X receiver stuff, which is a lot of what T. Higgins does for Cincinnati. And by the way, that's not like I don't think that's a perfect player comparison. I'm just talking about from a usage archetype standpoint.
Sure, right.
Straight line X receiver is Carnell Tate. And then when they've settled on T. Higgins being that in Cincinnati, that's allowed them to do like all of the fun stuff with Jamar Chase, moving him around the formation, getting him work from the slot, layup targets, stuff like that. Let him run with the ball in his hands. You might not want to do that with Malik in September coming off of a serious injury, but at the end of this coming season, down the line in the future with this pairing and Jackson Dart, you're going to be able to then maximize Malik Nabers even more by getting a guy like this at fifth overall. So it helps you really improve in two positions here, I think, if you take him, even if like you're taking a quote number two receiver at the fifth overall pick, and that might feel a little rich.
I agree completely. Yeah, it's all about how I think far too often we have the conversation of, well, do you draft this guy in the top five? And it's like, man, I just think that's way too in a vacuum. We have historical data and, you know, things that we can point to give us a framework to start from. But I think too many people take that and then like make that the law. Like this is how things go. When in reality, that should be the starting point for you. And then you go, okay, where are we in our team building strategy? What positions do we need? What does the composition look of our wide receiver room? Is like things like that. This player versus the rest of the class. You mentioned how you kind of got to throw positional value out the window for this class. I'm pretty sure I'm going to end up with Caleb Downs, a safety, Jeremiah Love, a running back, and Sonny Styles, a linebacker, as my top three players in the class. Like, I think those are going to be one, two, and three for me. And those are all non-premium position players. So I think that the conversation just has to be a little bit different, because when you pigeonhole yourself to thinking like, no, we've got to do things by the books, it's a good guideline, but it shouldn't always be, we do this. It's got to be, okay, this is the starting point, but how does this player maybe change things in this situation for us? And I think you got to be willing to have those conversations. And for the Giants with Carnell Tate, yeah, I think that getting him and pairing him with Malik Nabers, if you really believe in Jackson Dart, could really take your team to the next level. And if you don't allow yourself to think like that, sometimes you'll miss on the players that could actually help you the most.
Yeah, and I'm not the biggest fan of the Matt Nagy hire. I've been pretty vocal about that. Wasn't my favorite thing the entire offseason, but the way to make a scheme like that that I think is pretty static and not necessarily weaponizing its players the best in terms of creating separation windows for these guys, the best way to maximize a scheme like that, get really awesome players. You're not thinking about that scheme. You're not thinking about that scheme too much. And I think if you have Tate and Nabers as your one and two, and yeah, like Jackson Dart in the gun with some of the RPOs and really letting it fly, man, that's going to be a really fun offense, even if, yeah, like as a scheme dork or whatever, you're not totally jazzed up about it. But this would be a landing spot for Tate, like from a dynasty standpoint, where I'd get pretty excited just because I do think I think he could probably end up, which is kind of the way I view T. Higgins. Like, I think he could probably hack it as a one, you know, like if he goes to a place that he ends up, like if he falls to Kansas City at nine, obviously that would be a great spot. I think he would be their wide receiver one in short order there.
I agree.
That's great, but I think he would just be just like he was in college. He would be a really awesome player as the number two, like 1B or whatever you want to call it, across from a potential elite number one, which I do think Malik Nabers still has the potential to be that elite guy as long as he comes back from the injury.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's a spot that would make me very, very excited to just talk about what could be the potency of this offense. And I agree. Yeah, I think we can look at Matt Nagy's as a play caller and his overall scheme and sort of the body of work that he's had in the NFL. But when you got these two guys to be able to throw the ball to, things tend to work out a lot more frequently than maybe they have in the past.
Yeah. Even a dumbass like me would be able to scheme up an offense potentially with those two guys there. So we'll see. All right, let's get to your third favorite player to team fit here. We're sticking in the NFC East for this one.
I'll go Dylan Thienemann, the safety from Oregon, going to the Dallas Cowboys at number 12 overall. I like this a lot, first and foremost, because I think that Dylan Thienemann is worth it. I think that him as a prospect is where we start here. I think that he is a top 12 overall player in this class, and the reason why is because I think that especially when you rope in how he tested athletically, I think he's got the full body of work that you would want from the safety position, especially from a deep safety. First 2 years that he was at Purdue, his freshman season had an elite coverage grade as a true single high free safety. And then that second year, they used him kind of weird. Like, you could tell that they didn't really trust basically anyone else on the defense, and they had Dylan Thienemann in like a super deep type of role, or even just like, you know, more of a linebacker. It was as if like they didn't really put him in positions to actually make plays. They just said, okay, well, if the guys in front of him don't do their job correctly, Dylan's got us in the back, and let's just put him like way back there to make sure it's not like 40, 50, 60-yard touchdowns all the time throughout the game. So it wasn't as impactful his sophomore year at Purdue. But then he transfers over to Oregon. And yes, he was still good at Oregon. But man, the examples that we have this year from him running from depth and filling the run at full speed at the line of scrimmage after being 25 yards out from where the line of scrimmage is, that stuff is so, so impressive. You can have athletes at the safety position, but a lot of them, if they're coming in full speed to make a tackle, they're either ankle diving or they're just going super aggressive, don't have any body control, and totally miss the tackle. Or a lot of them will run, but not as fast as they could because they want to stay more in control. Dylan Thienemann can basically operate as fast as he can possibly run, yet still stay fundamentally strong to line guys up between the shoulders, really be able to wrap up and make some tackles at the line of scrimmage. So when you look at his combine and you look at how he tested like an elite athlete, you can take that elite athleticism and say, this player has range, not just coverage range, run defense range. It's both of these things. He is a true fly around the field. Always, we use the phrase all the time, oh, he's always near the ball. Dylan Thienemann has the ability to truly be always near the ball, whether it's a catch, a contested catch situation, an interception, a tackle at the line of scrimmage, a tackle at the second level, whatever that looks like for him. He's got the playmaking ability and the athleticism to be able to do that. Now, he's a little bit lighter of a safety, so if he gets man coverage against tight ends, yeah, he can get bodied a little bit. You don't want him living at the second level as like a pseudo linebacker, like a true box safety type of a player, just because you're not maximizing what he does well. You're asking him to be a big, strong safety when he's, I wouldn't say he's small, but he's below 50th percentile in a lot of his measurables for safety, let alone if he's playing more at the second level. So if you want to be a box safety for you, yeah, okay, he's probably not your cup of tea. But Dallas needs playmaking ability on the back end, even with the Jalen Thompson signing. So to me, I love this fit because Dallas needs it. But like I said at the top, first and foremost, he's worth it. I think he's a top 12 overall player in the class.
You mentioned just some of the measurables on him, according to Mock Draftable, 39th percentile height for a safety, 27th percentile weight, but 82nd percentile wingspan. And I feel like you see that both in, as you mentioned, the coverage range, but also what he does as a tackler. Like, he's a pretty strong wrap-up player. And then that's not to mention 94th percentile vertical jump, 97th percentile 40-yard dash, 75th percentile 10-yard split. And, like, that kind of, I think, really shows who he is because, yeah, he flies around super athletic, and that just gets you really excited about a player like this who also is not small by any means. I mean, he's not quite Nicky Manwari freak show level, but, you know, 6 foot, over 200 pounds. Like, there's something there from an athletic standpoint, no question about it. And, you know, I've been working on some receivers against that Oregon defense, and, like, yeah, this guy just always pops up. He's always crowd in that middle of the field. He's always, like, cleaning up tackles close to the line of scrimmage. Very, very impressive player. When you're looking at him and specifically thinking about him in this Dallas defense here, where do you think he kind of fits in this, I don't know if I want to call it like an expanding safety big nickel archetype, but that's obviously, again, to come back to your boy Iman Wari, that's a big discussion point coming out of this season, because we know how this always works. It's a copycat league. It's like, we got to get our own version of this big nickel player. Can he fit into that bucket, or where do you see him more as just a true safety?
No, I mean, I think that he can do a lot of stuff for you because he's that good of an athlete. But I do think that he can play, you know, the nickel defender role because he's good, because he's so good as a tackler. Right? I think that is a often forgotten element of being able to be a really good nickel defender is you have to tackle. You are closer to the line of scrimmage, and the closer you are to the line of scrimmage, you have to play strong and you have to be able to tackle. If you can't defend the run, long gone are the days where your slot corner is just your smallest CB3, CB4 on the team. Nope. Like, we don't live in that world anymore.
You're going to get fried. Yeah.
And that's why I had Cooper DeJean as a top 10 player on my board in that draft class. And the reason why is because, humble brag. Funny enough, I also had Quinyon Mitchell top 10 in that class, and they ended up with both of those guys picking him later outside of the top 10. speaking of a Christian Parker defense here with the Dallas Cowboys, when you are playing close to the line of scrimmage, you have to be able to tackle. It's why Cooper DeJean, and I wasn't really worried about him going to the NFL. Like, did I have some flexibility concerns with him playing as a full-time outside corner? Sure, but you know where I didn't have concerns with him at all is playing in the slot, like where Iowa would play him at times, and he'd match up against tight ends and he'd be close to the line of scrimmage and he could tackle. And I'm like, this is the modern day nickel. Like, not what you guys are talking about of like these smaller, quicker corner. Like, this player is the modern day nickel defender. And when I look at Dylan Thienemann, I don't know exactly how he stacks up against DeJean when it comes to overall measurables, but like, I see a player who has the potential to be in the nickel in the modern day game. So you could play him in the nickel, but I think also you could play him as a single high free safety as well. So to me, for Christian Parker, who is now the defensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles, who was their DB coach and then passing game coordinator for the last couple of years, he knows what it takes. He knows what it's like to be versatile and have those guys inside and out, and what it takes to play in the slot, what it takes to play as a deep safety. So I got faith that he'll be able to use him in some versatile ways.
I mean, I've got the mock draft spider charts. I'm sure Jung is furious with me that I'm doing this on my screen and we're not visualizing on the show here for YouTube. But looking at the mock draftable spider charts here, if you just look at these guys as DBs, 54th percentile height for Thienemann, 57th for DeJean. They're 6 foot 1/8 for Thienemann, 6 foot and a half for Cooper DeJean, 201 pounds to Thienemann, 203 pounds for DeJean. Wingspan wise, that's where Thienemann has a huge advantage. 84th percentile wingspan to 34th for DeJean. So there's that difference, but otherwise, build wise, pretty similar for sure. Similar. So they're definitely in that bucket. So I wouldn't be surprised if Christian Parker sees his version of a Cooper DeJean type player. Man, if you get that at 12th overall, that would be pretty epic. Because I mean, I always come back to the game from this past year when the Eagles played the Chargers, and I love Ladd McConkey. He's one of my favorite route runners, one of my favorite separators overall in the league. And DeJean had him like locked down in a couple of moments and doing the like hand wave, you know, the no wave there too. So if you can get a player like that here, even, and again, an 80% version of that, I think that's pretty worth the 12th overall pick with Dylan Thienemann. So I know you've been all over him as a top pick here. So it makes a lot of sense why you've got him slotted here at 12th overall.
Yeah, I think he's a stud.
Love it. All right, we are going to take our first quick break. When we come back, we've got more player to team fits that Trevor absolutely loves. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to run through some of Trevor Sycamore's player to team fits that he absolutely loves from his most recent mock draft. Let's get into your fourth matchup here, Trevor.
So I'll go Akeem Mesidor, the edge rusher, from Miami, going to the Detroit Lions in the middle of the first round there at number 17 overall. I have Akeem Mesidor as my edge two in this draft. I have Reuben Bain as my edge one, and I have Akeem Mesidor as my edge two. It is so easy to watch these guys play at Miami and coached by the Hall of Famer, Jason Taylor. And so that's why when you watch both of these guys, there is no fat to trim on their pass rush reps. I mean, these guys not only have both deep pass rush bags, but also they are strong. They know counters. Messidor's motor runs hot. I know he's going to be one of the older prospects in the draft. He's going to be 25. But the way that I say it to people is, look, if you're the Miami Dolphins, are you going to think about Akeem Messidor? No, because you're nowhere close to winning. You're totally rebuilding the roster. And by the time that you are good enough, you know, Akeem Messidor is going to be 28, 29 years old. And okay, that doesn't fit your timeline. Detroit's trying to win now. And they need to fill an edge rush spot immediately. We already thought that they didn't have an edge rusher opposite Aiden Hutchinson. And then they lost Al-Kadeem Muhammad. They signed DJ Wanham. Okay, that's fine. They needed somebody. But outside of that, I mean, I'm looking at their depth chart now. It's Ahmed Hassanein and Tyler Lacy. That's it. That's their edge rush room outside of Aiden Hutchinson. So if you draft Messidor, you immediately put pressure on the other team to where you're not going to be able to double team Aiden Hutchinson as much as you want, because the pass rush win percentage that Messidor had this past season, how quickly he wins, how much he's going to be able to hit the ground running as a rookie. Yeah, it'll take a little bit of time. It takes a little bit of time for all rookies. I'm not saying he's going to have, you know, 12, 13 sacks right off the bat as a rookie, but you get into the second half of his rookie season, if he's fully healthy, man, this dude's 6'3", played at 265 pounds. He's got the strength from when he had more weight on him as a defensive tackle and a nose tackle, and he has trimmed that weight over the last couple of years where that strength is still there, but the explosiveness is there. Again, the pass rush plan is there. The relentlessness, the motor is there for him. I just think that he is a perfect type of player for Detroit who needs to get more pass rush presence from their defensive line this upcoming season. And Messidor, I think, is just what the doctor ordered there.
There's no question it is a massive need. It has been a massive need for Detroit. No doubt about it. And I do want to come back to Detroit like as a whole here in a minute, because if you look at their depth chart, you said you had it pulled up. They kind of got it. They quietly have a lot of needs, you know, for a team. I think that is a true, or at least should view itself, has previously viewed itself as one of the true contenders in the NFC. So put a pin in that. We'll come back to it. I want to talk about the age thing here for people real quick, because, you know, there's no question it's going to be a talking point. We're showing my colleague Nate Tice here on the screen. He mentioned it's going to be a talking point for the next few months, but he can absolutely get after the passer, as you highlighted there. A bag of moves, there's no doubt. The athleticism's there. But I think I do want to unpack like why the fact that he will be a 25-year-old rookie is a red flag. And I think it's not for the reasons that you sometimes see people – I'm sure listeners and viewers, you know, see this on social media. It's like, yeah, well, he's 25 years old. Who cares what he's going to be like when he's 30 or 31? Like, you know, the whole deal. That's not what it's about. It's not about the career length. It's that sometimes, and listen, I say this as someone that has made this mistake with the receiver position. I think about a guy like Andrew Armstrong in last year's class, an SEC, like he led the SEC in receiving. And it's like, man, how can this guy not even be? I don't even think he's on an NFL roster right now. He went undrafted because his film was really impressive. Well, he turned 25 in October. Like he was a grown ass man going against dudes that, you know, were like 18, 19 years old. And I think for a guy like Messidor, it's worth considering, like, is the film and like the pass rush metrics. I'm kind of playing a little bit devil's advocate here, but they look better? Do they look better because he is older than his competition, especially because he's not necessarily like a freak athlete, 6'3", 259, 10th percentile arm length, 24th percentile wingspan. Mm-hmm. So is there any kind of credence to that?
Of course. And, you know, I love Akeem Messidor, and I think he's a first round player. But I won't sit here and be like, anybody who thinks opposite is an idiot. Like, that's not true at all. The concerns are valid and worth talking about. The way that I would counter that is, a lot of times when you get some of these older prospects, a lot of them, like Armstrong is one of their examples, where he had pretty clean film, but Armstrong won a lot off of size and athleticism, I thought, watching him when he was at Arkansas. When you talk about translating from even the SEC level, from college to the NFL, it's so very rare that you can either out-big or out-athlete anybody at the NFL level. It's just the very best of the best. The reason why I have some concerns, of course, like those are valid. Like I have some concerns about Mesidor in that area, but I'm not overly concerned is because the way that he wins, I think, is translatable in the NFL. I think the way that Mesidor wins is almost like you're taking a pro, like a guy who is fully developed in his pass rush plan, what to do if the first move fails, what to do if the second move fails, like all of this stuff, executing leverage, knowing what to do with your hands, all of that. He is so well taught from Jason Taylor over the last 3 years that's why I have faith that if you plop him into the NFL, it's not like the way he won in college isn't translatable to once you become a pro. I think that it is. So that's sort of where I would kind of counter in that regard. I think there's a little more so than the career longevity. I think the injury, it is sort of where does the body start to break down after playing in the trenches when you get 3 years in? That's the biggest concern to me. But again, I don't think Akeem Mesidor is a first round player for every team in the NFL. He is very much you have to have a nuanced conversation about him. But you look at teams that might need pass rusher immediately and who are in a winning window. Like I think Detroit is in that category. And I would say for them, like I thought about the Ravens kind of before they added Trey Hendrickson. It's a little different. Like the Ravens are another team where I'm like, okay, winning window for them right now. They have a franchise quarterback. They obviously want to take the next step and the leap to be able to get to the Super Bowl. He's a worthwhile investment as a top pick in this class specifically, right? It's not like we're ripe on all sorts of, 21-year-old elite pass rushers by the time you're probably drafting this guy in the second half of the first round, right? You're not having that conversation. So I think when you just think of the full context of where this draft is and who he is as a player, I think the way he wins is very translatable to the NFL. I don't think he's leaning on being older, bigger, stronger, more athletic, and more refined than some of these, 19, 20, 21-year-olds that he's going up against. I think the way he wins technically translates really well to the NFL.
Well, only a Sith deals in absolutes, and that's why I do think when you're dealing with sort of this kind of overall thought of, is it, like what this guy is an older player, let's unpack that red flag. Yeah, if it is an Andrew Armstrong type who wasn't one of the best technicians. By the way, producer Colin is telling me that Andrew Armstrong is actually on the Chiefs roster. He's correct. January 6th, signed a reserve future contract with the Kansas City Chiefs. So check your dynasty waiver wires for the Chiefs' future ex-receiver, Andrew Armstrong. No, I'm kidding, but maybe not kidding.
And I'm like, if they don't get Carnell Tate, that's Plan B. That's Plan B. It just goes straight to Andrew Plan Armstrong B. Right there.
I mean, that 6'3", 202 pounds, I don't see a lot of other Chiefs receivers pushing 200 pounds, okay? They got a lot of small dudes out there. They need a big boy, even if he's like, my age. I mean, give me a break. Come on. But anyways, no, you're right about that Andrew Armstrong wasn't this like technique-based wide receiver. Mm-hmm. It was more like size, athleticism, being that grown-ass man as opposed to the guys that he's going against where, this guy, Mesidor, is a technician. I think, again, it's not an absolute rule here. It's not a pass-fail thing. You got to kind of unpack that from a big picture perspective. And there's no question, Trevor, that you mentioned it, like Detroit just has a huge need for that edge two here. And they do need a guy that is like technically ready to rock right now, because I don't think they're going to be able to accomplish all of what they need to do this offseason. That is a depth chart that has gotten pretty weak here over the last, it's not a weak depth chart. Let me say that again. It's gotten a little weaker than we're used to seeing for this Lions team. But so being able to patch what's, I think, probably their biggest need and has been their biggest need, this would go a long way to getting them back to the contender status that they want to be at.
No, no question. But I mean, there's no doubt that when you look at the Detroit Lions, they've got more question marks than what they've had over the last couple of years. And specifically, it's at two positions that are of paramount importance. They have a massive question mark at left tackle, and they have a massive question mark at edge rusher. Those are two premium positions. Like it's hard to be a contender going into the season having massive question marks at both of those spots. So yeah, I mean, I think we're locked into offensive tackle or edge rusher for the Detroit Lions at number 17. It just kind of depends on how the board falls.
All right, let's get to your fifth and final favorite player to team fit. Another big time NFC contender here on this one.
Yeah, so for the Philadelphia Eagles, my player to team fit for them is Omar Cooper Jr., the wide receiver from Indiana. And the reason why is I won't say that A.J. Brown's played his last game as an Eagle, because I don't 100% believe that. But if there are games left to be played, they are in the single digits. Like, I think that at the very least,
yeah,
he is getting traded before next year's trade deadline. I think it's most likely that he's traded right around June 1st. I think that there's a chance that maybe they hold on to him until training camp, and maybe one of these teams that are interested in his services gets a little bit more desperate and tries to up the price a little bit. But if he goes into next season with the Eagles, I just don't know, man. I just don't see it working out well, and I think that he is dealt by the time they get to the trade deadline. And so what does Howie Roseman do best? He gets ahead of his needs, always, especially on positions mm-hmm. that mean a lot. And when you look at wide receiver, they did sign Hollywood Brown recently, but outside of Hollywood Brown, Darius Cooper, Britton Covey, Johnny Wilson, Quez Watkins, Danny Gray. I mean, if you take A.J. Brown off of this team, it's basically just Devontae Smith, and I'd throw in Dallas Goedert as well, but Goedert was scored a barely back on a one-year deal. So yeah. A year from now in free agency, you could be looking at, because I got to assume that the Hollywood Brown deal is 1 year at this point with him signing he did.
Yeah. It is.
So if you look a year from now, you might have Dallas Goedert, Grant Calcaterra, A.J. Brown, Hollywood Brown, all gone. And at that point, you have Cam Latu at tight end, Devontae Smith, obviously, and then the other wide receivers that I just named without looking up their contracts, which I'm sure some of them are going to be up next year anyways. That receiver need gets really thin for them, or at least it's really emphasized, I should say, as the depth chart gets really thin. So Omar Cooper Jr., I think, is somebody who wins in a variety of different ways. I think he's good off the line of scrimmage with his releases, and he's got really nice hands, and he's a pretty good route runner. Is he the most athletic? No, but I was actually impressed with how much of an athlete he was at the combine. I was like, okay, this is kind of impressive, you know, because I see flashes of it on tape, but I go, how much is really in there for you? Is this just a good play? But I think he's a fantastic all-around type of a wide receiver. If they've got the ability to take one of the big three guys, a Carnell Tate, a Jordan Tyson, a Mekhi Lemon, sure, that would have been my pick here at 23. But those guys are often well off the board by the time that we get to that point. I think Jordan Tyson might have been available in this situation, but his injury history, it's so up in the air for him. And so to be honest, it's sort of like a wide receiver at 23. That was the real emphasis and the point of this pick here in this mock draft, because things could get really, really thin in Philadelphia in terms of passing playmakers to be had a year from now.
No question. I'm with you that I think A.J. Brown's days with the Eagles are numbered, if not, you know, soon to be over at this point. I actually said this on Reception Perception with James Coe on Wednesday. We taped that show, and I was like, it would not surprise me if we get out of the draft and the Patriots haven't taken a wide receiver and all their fans are freaking out about it. And then we find out, oh, there's been a handshake agreement all along that they're sending him after the June 1st, you know, kind of trade date that they're sending him there. And then there's been some internet chatter, you know, about that. I mean, we've seen A.J. Brown working out with now Patriots safety Kevin Byard. I think I saw him on a podcast with Julian Edelman tweeted out the clip of like him saying we're all Patriots, and A.J. Brown gives a little wink at it. I laughed at that.
That's good. That is former and current player content at his best. Julian Edelman just going like, we're all Patriots here. And it's just like A.J. sitting right. I don't know, man. I think that stuff's hilarious.
I think it's great. I love the way AJ interacts with this stuff too. He's very online. He's very aware of what's being said. So I think it's very likely that he's a New England Patriot this season, and we'll leave it at that at some point here. But let's talk about Omar Cooper a little bit. I think he is an interesting player, especially in this situation. We're showing this on the screen right now here. If you're watching along with us on YouTube, just that little wink. That's just beautiful stuff. Well done to both of guys. Both wear number 11. Look at that. Okay, maybe he asked Edelman. And if it's cool if he can wear the number 11 in New England, potentially we'll see. Okay, so Omar Cooper, though, in this offense, number one is very interesting. Across from a true guy, I think, is ready to be an alpha wide receiver in Devontae Smith. I think that will allow Omar Cooper to do some of the things that he is good at. Because I will admit, Trevor, I'm still a little mixed on Cooper as a round one receiver. I think he's a very good player. I will, first of all, before I go any further, how many like true first round grades do you have in this class?
So I think again, like in a vacuum, I'm pretty sure Tyson's the only true round one grade that I gave. And then Tate and Lemon got like the late.
I meant generally, not just at receiver, like across all positions.
Oh, whoa. Oh, I don't even know off the top of my head. It's not many. It's not many like true first round grades in this class. No, yeah, it's not a lot.
That's kind of what I'm getting at, is that I've talked with people, mm-hmm. You know, just that there's just not 20 first round players in this class.
No,
you know,
not in this class.
So when I see like Omar Cooper, 23rd overall pick, I'm like, that's not really the archetype of receiver I want to be taking at the 23rd overall pick. I like that much more in round two and round one. It's like, okay, well, what else are you going to do? Because here's the thing that's good about Omar Cooper. Yeah, right. Here's the good thing about Omar Cooper is that, like, I can tell you right now, there's a pretty high floor to what he can be. I think he, at worst, it's like he could be like Khalil Shakir at worst, like a bigger version of that player, just in terms of role mm-hmm. in your offense. But you think there's a lot more to that, because that's kind of where I'm stuck a little bit. I got two more games to work on for him before his full sample is done. So I'm still kind of working some of this out. But I just don't totally see like the man coverage ability to be kind of like a high volume receiver in the NFL. Or do you think I'm missing something there?
No, I don't. I see him pretty similarly to the way that you do. I think that the hype for him as like a top 20 player overall in this class is rich for my blood. And I know I'm talking about a fit mm-hmm. that I like here with him going at 23, but it's sort of the reason why I like this is more about the conversation of like Philly, if they have the opportunity to get a wide receiver that they think complements DeVonta Smith really well at 23, I don't think they should shy away from that. And at this point in time, you know, we're doing mocks for a predictive standpoint anyways. And so it feels like Omar Cooper is getting that first round sort of hype and momentum to him. But no, I agree with you. I think this is a very good player. I think this is a really good day two type of a wide receiver to get, but it's just that type of a draft class. You're right. You could get to 23 and you could say, the player's too rich for me. Yeah, I don't know if I like this player at 23. Yeah, I don't know, but I like him, but at 23. And you could just do that for eight different guys. And then all of a sudden, the clock's got 2 minutes left. You go, hey, Howie, we need a pick here, actually. So you talked about eight guys that you didn't like at 23, but we actually have to make a pick here. So it's just kind of one of those drafts where, again, I think the conversation for this draft is a lot more about how do we build the best team we possibly can, as opposed to like specific positional value of saying like this player doesn't traditionally go number three overall. Like again, same way that we talked about Tate, this player doesn't traditionally go number five overall. Yeah, but is it the best team building pick that we can make? Because if so, let's do it and let's reload for 2027, which looks like a more talented draft class just overall top to bottom. So I think that's sort of the conversation that I would have there, because I think Omar Cooper Jr., very solid, very good receiver, and I think he could be a wide receiver too at the NFL level, especially next to a guy like DeVonta Smith. And I think that perhaps that is the best team-building strategy for them, knowing how thin they're about to be at wide receiver. If they're assuming that A.J. Brown is no longer on this team, they're going to need somebody. And I don't think Hollywood Brown is that option for them as wide receiver too.
No, neither do I. And that's the key right there, is that in the right spot for Omar Cooper, I think he could be awesome in the NFL. Like he's talked about the Debo comp. Fernando Mendoza's talked about the Debo comp. And like Debo's a guy that wasn't a slot only player, but he was a zone beater who won after the catch. Wasn't always the best man coverage receiver. And I think that does say some similar stuff to Omar Cooper. And in this offense, the where I think they're going under Sean Mannion, where I think they want to go under Sean Mannion, like across from, you can do some cool stuff where like Omar Cooper is that great receiver on the outcuts, and DeVonta Smith is truly special working over the middle of the field, even against man coverage. You could put defenses in conflict with those guys. So if you're trying to be invested in Omar Cooper from like a fantasy or dynasty perspective, this is the type of situation that you want him to go into, because he's going to see the coverages that you want him to see. He's going to see the alignments that you want him to see, and he's going to get a ton of those like easy button touches to just like rack up fantasy points and stuff like that. So I think there's no question this would be a good matchup, good landing spot for him. And I do think he's going to need that right type of landing spot. We are going to take our final quick break. When we come back, we get the prospect that Trevor is willing to stand on the table for in this year's this class. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. Trevor, let's wrap it up with the one player you want to stand on the table for.
Captain, my captain.
Sit down, Mr. Anderson.
We have Bills Mafia here.
Let's go!
I mean, that doesn't get you jacked up to stand on the table for a prospect. I don't know what will. Trevor, who is the player, the prospect you want to stand on the table for in this draft?
LSU safety AJ Halsey is my dude. From the moment that I started watching this guy, and honestly, from the very beginning of the season, I was watching LSU versus Clemson. It was week one. It was one of the first games of the college football season. And I'm watching AJ Halsey, and I'm like, who is this dude? Like, he is... The confidence in which he plays as a robber type of a safety, a true middle of the field enforcer. First of all, he plays around 220 pounds, which feels like a lost art for today's safety. A lot of these guys are playing around 200, 205 pounds because they're trying to fly around. They're trying to be free safeties. They just want the interceptions. Trust me, AJ Halsey's got a highlight reel when it comes to his interceptions. He's not getting gifts out there. He's going up and getting those. Believe his nickname, he said, is Mr. Give Me That. So that goes into the mentality that he has when the ball is in the air to make those big plays. Look, I'll start a little bit with the ways that he's limited. He's not the most fluid when it comes to turning his hips to run. He's not the fastest player at the safety position. So there are a little bit of physical limitations. If you put him in man coverage against tight ends, he doesn't fare super well in man coverage. So there are limitations to him a little bit. But when you put this guy on the back end and when you give him some freedom to play that robber role, that cover one rat role over the middle of the field, the way that he can go and attack those in-breaking routes, those intermediate routes, I mean, it is just such a benefit to how he plays, the way that he can read the quarterback's eyes, how that 220 pounds, like, yeah, he's got maybe some overall tackling consistency issues, but when he lowers the shoulder, I mean, he's going to hit you. I mean, he's a hammer because of the weight that he has. So he brings back a little bit of a throwback enforcer type of a play style to him, but the playmaking in the passing game as well, again, the interceptions, the forced incompletions, that's all there for him as well. I just love the overall mentality that he has. And if you're in a defense where that's the player in the secondary that you naturally in your structure give the freedom to, I think he could be a major difference maker and potentially a Pro Bowl player at the next level.
I love this call out. You said the word enforcer. That is exactly right. Like, he is going to let you know that he is there, both from the ball production standpoint and the way he comes down on routes and hits receivers. It would be probably not for everybody. For some of these, you know, more quarter defenses, stuff like that, he's not going to be for everybody necessarily. Yeah, you want a man coverage up on a tight end. Like you said, don't love that, but you want a guy that's going to read the quarterback, hunt the football, pop guys underneath, over the middle of the field. I mean, there's a lot of potential for him to really stand out in this draft class. So that's a great call out. Do you have any just maybe a defense, maybe a coordinator that you think actually could really maximize a guy like this?
Oh, man, who would be the best one? I feel like I draft him a lot to the Jets specifically. I know Connor, my co-host at NFL Stock Exchange,
Some interceptions. So,
and it's kind of one of those things where, like, Minka could probably play the slot for you because Minka talked about in his opening press conference, like, playing more in the slot. So, like, Minka could handle a lot of the slot roles where you don't have Halsey doing that. And then he can be more of that, like, back end defender for you where he gets to actually patrol that middle of the field. So the Jets is the first one that I think about where I like him in that system because I feel like you already have a slot option where you're not going to be forced to, like, play him in those situations where he might not be great in man coverage. So I think the Jets is probably the team that I draft him to the most.
Yeah, a lot of the teams that ran a lot of cover one last year, like Cleveland, took up their changing over defenses, Giants changing over their defenses. So it's a little bit difficult there, but I think there's a lot of Pittsburgh, you know, like there's definitely some interesting spots where he could end up, but it is kind of tough to think about off the top of the head. But certainly the Jets could use some ball production. After no interceptions last year, that would certainly help. But yeah, I love the way you highlight him. He feels like a safety, you know, from back in our day, the safeties that we grew up watching, Trevor Sikkema. Mm-hmm. That is what he feels like to me. All right, Trevor, this was absolutely awesome. Love this conversation. We dove into a ton here. Tell the people what they can check out from you all the way leading up to this draft season.
Sure. All the draft stuff over at the NFL Stock Exchange podcast, myself and Connor Rogers covering the draft as deep as we possibly can, every single position, all the team needs, the team specific big boards, the mock drafts, all that good stuff. And of course, you know, the MDS, the big boards, all over at PFF.com as well.
Yeah, make sure you check that out. The NFL Stock Exchange, great show. Trevor and Connor are absolutely fantastic. So if you like this show, you're going to absolutely love that one as well. As for us, this show, we will be back on Tuesday. Justin Boone joins me as we kick off our teams that will shape the draft series. We're looking at teams with multiple first round picks this year, and there's a good bit of them. So I think you guys are going to like it. Until then, we are out.